seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Well, Golf Weekly friends, 2020 starts today, really. Nathan Murphy in studio, hello.
How are you?
Peter Lawrie in studio as well, hello.
Hello, Joe.
And Fionn Davenport also with us, hello.
Gentlemen.
That's a full house. It feels like golf is starting this week, Nathan Murphy.
Oh, tell that to Lee Westwood.
Well, OK, we'll come to Lee Westwood. I'm talking about Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy.
Oh, yes.
Farmer Insurance Open.
And most importantly, a reasonable finishing time.
Yes, well, that's true. Peter Lawrie, you're welcome back. You were in Portugal.
I was indeed,
and
off enjoying myself.
More significantly, you were golfing in a competition.
Hard to believe. I got invited to play in a pro-am. It was over 4 days, so four rounds of golf.
Were you insulted?
72 holes.
Oh, you were a pro?
I was.
Oh, wow.
Still am.
Can you go back? Can you become an amateur again?
It would take me about 10 years.
What?
Why? What's the process?
It goes on the amount of money that you've won.
Oof.
And you won a lot, as we know.
10 years sounds decent.
Yeah.
So how did you get on in the pro-am? What was it like to have a scorecard in your pocket?
Very different. Very different. As I said to the my playing partners, it was the first time I've played a round of golf, this is no lie, in competition with the new rules. Could leave the flag in. Didn't get comfortable with that at all.
And when you said this to your playing partners, who probably have spent several thousand euro to travel to Portugal to play in this pro-am,
it was actually a whole lot cheaper than that.
Okay.
And if anybody's interested, it's on starting January the 10th next year. Well worth the trip.
Shameless. So did you play well? Did you find, I'm not making light of this when I say this, you know, did suddenly driving woes come back with a bit of tension and a scorecard, or did you find yourself enjoying it and playing well?
No, I enjoyed it. I shot a level par for four rounds, which isn't bad.
That's very acceptable. Had you done much practice?
None.
That's extremely acceptable.
And were you playing off the back tees?
No.
Less acceptable.
Playing off the forward tees.
So does this mean, did a thought run across your mind, will I look to do a bit more of this in 2020?
I think so, yeah. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It got my interest back, I have to admit.
Really?
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the actual playing and the, I wouldn't say struggling, but the, putting a round together. And that was, getting it up and down when I had to and that kind of thing. I'd go back to it.
To the extent that you'd be back practicing?
A little bit, yeah, for sure.
So what avenues are open to you?
Look, I have seniors tour in 4 years' time. Am I going to go back to seniors tour? I'll certainly give it a lot of thought.
Yeah.
But have I an interest now to actually go back and hit some balls? Yes.
So you could play in something like the Irish PGA, could you?
I could do if I wanted to, yeah. Or a few pro-ams or maybe a Euro Pro event or something like that. Now, don't get me wrong, I have no intentions of going back full-time.
Mm.
I'm very happy where I am. I'm very happy to be at home with the family. But
if an Irish Open invite came your way?
Oh, I wouldn't accept it. Absolutely not.
Unfair on other people?
It would be unfair on other people. Okay. Now, what I might do is I might try and qualify. There is a qualifying, and I might try and qualify. But I definitely wouldn't accept an invitation.
So Pro-Am's obviously an enjoyable few days, and you were quite relaxed going into it. If you're thinking about an Irish PGA, would you be a bit nervous?
Not at all, no. No.
Even going back and all the success you've had, that like they're waiting to take you down?
I was nervous going out to Portugal because I got a text message from Joe, am I okay for the podcast? And I said, well, I'll do it out in Quinta del Lago, no problem. And I didn't say where I was going.
I just thought you were on a holiday.
Exactly. But I was nervous that way because I didn't know where my game would be at, having not really played, not practiced. I think before I left, I hit two half bucket of golf balls in Spawa. I did no chipping, no putting practice, no nothing. And I went out there and I could chip the ball okay. My bunker play was horrendous, and that's one thing that it needs a bit of work on. But in general, I was comfortable off the tee. My iron play was halfway decent. Now, my quality of my game was always trying to hit a pin high. That wasn't great, but it was an acceptable. It was an acceptable form.
Passable professional standard, I suppose.
Exactly. Yeah.
How much practice would you have to put in across a given week to win the Irish PGA?
Oh, I think you'd have to put in. For me to go to a tournament, I'd have to put in a lot of practice.
3-4 hours a day.
Yeah. Just to be comfortable in myself and to say, you know, not to be able to give out to yourself that you didn't give yourself a proper opportunity.
Okay. Geez, exciting times for Peter Lawrie, Fionn.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's great. I'd like to see Peter. I'd like to see a Peter on the seniors tour in a few years' time. I think it'd be great to follow and say, I know him. I actually know him.
There you go.
It'll be a bit weird, though, when, you know, on day one of the seniors tour, there's not many people out watching and we're all like, we know him. And they're like, Peter's like, lads, would you just feck off for a few hours?
You're probably slagging me then. Why, as well.
Bloody hell, lads, give me a break here. Yeah. Oh, come on, Peter. All talk for the last 5 years.
I could do an inside the seniors tour.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, and some people would be very happy to see you. I'm paired with Simon Dyson. Great.
Boxing gloves on.
I'm sure. So a few tweets in before we get into, well, there's a lot to talk about. So Emmett Kane, I figure we should kick things off in a familiar way. He makes an interesting point, and this is something that we will try and do. I'm not on top of it yet. He says, lads, a new handicap system comes into effect later this year. Very few have a clue what it entails. I've been a handicap secretary, and I've tried to read up, but it's opaque, and I'm still unsure. You definitely should cover this in a pod. So, look, Emmett, if you have tried to read up on it thus far, you're streets ahead of us, but we'll try and get someone on. Maybe from the Golf Union of Ireland, just to explain it in simple terms. We'll do that.
It's a slope system, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is the American handicap system, which rates... So your handicap is related to your golf course. So your golf course will have a slope rating. Mm. So a tough golf course will have, you know, a low handicap is worth more than, say, the equivalent handicap at a slightly easier golf course where stroke index is higher. That kind of thing. Mm. It's intended to make handicapping fairer.
I think that's it, what Emmett was looking for right there.
There you go, Emmett.
Yeah, there you go.
Done.
Unfortunately, with the new handicapping
system...
Oh,
don't be contradicting them. Just run with what Fionn said.
I have to say, I don't agree with it because you get ridiculously high handicaps. Absolutely. Like, grown men and ladies playing off 54.
Oh, that's true.
How do you end up with that? Because
your handicap now is based over your best, I think, 7 rounds of golf that you play, and every time you play counts for your handicap. Whether you're going out to play a few holes in the evening time or on a Saturday if you're not playing the competition. The new system is going to affect competitions dramatically around the country.
And do you think most people's handicap will go up or down?
Will go up.
Oh, will it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Peter, am I not wrong in, I heard a statistic a few years ago, is that 90% of all regular golfers can't play to their stated handicap?
It wouldn't surprise me. It really wouldn't. I give you an example, and for all our friends listening in America, majority of them coming across to Ireland are all playing off the wrong handicap. They're all way too low for their ability.
Well, I knew that, and then I knew that they were effectively globalising the handicap system, so I had figured, well, all the poor Americans will go from a handicap of 5 out to 12, but we'll stay put on this side of the world.
No, because they're already in the system. They're all in the...
Then why would they be lower and why would we go higher?
Because we're a whole lot cleverer than they are. A lot of people would be for competition-wise. But our golf courses would be probably a little bit more difficult.
Okay. Right. I just go down to single figures.
It's a minefield.
Glad we cleared that up.
Oh, no.
It's an absolute minefield.
There you go.
Nathan
Emmett
has a face on him like, I don't know.
Well, I'm going to be playing off 54, so I couldn't give a damn.
He's about to win his monthly medal. You stop. Yeah, John Barry wants to know if we can get, and he included, at Brian O'Driscoll on the pod to talk about playing with Rory and Tiger. We should do that. Actually.
At Brian O'Driscoll didn't respond, did he?
No. So Colin says, you and I, Nathan, a week or two ago, talking about Patrick Reed being jeered and wondering, will this be a tricky thing for him? Don't be soft. said Colin. The heckling isn't impressive, but what's to be expected if the PGA and the player himself are just trying to sweep it under the carpet? And then Sean Hardyman says, I know I'm late to the show here, but I just got around to reading The Big Miss by Hank Haney. That is quite late to the show. It just occurred to me that all the justified abuse Kuchar has got for being tight is unfair, given that Tiger was on another level of tightness.
But was Tiger at a level of tightness to those close to him?
He only paid Hank Haney 50 grand.
But I wonder when he was... So did Mark Steinberg step across if there was a standing caddy, which I can't really remember happening, and make sure that they were sorted out and that they signed their waiver and they got well looked after?
I think Haney's was talking more about just general life.
Oh, the ice cream. That he's in Tiger's house. Tiger goes out to the kitchen, gets himself an ice cream, sits down, eats it, while Hank's just left sitting there.
The bellboy in the hotel, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The waitress, that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. I'm sure Woods would have a different story, only fair to say. Let's start with some of the news of the week just gone by, namely Lee Westwood. 46 years old, Peter. Okay.
Incredibly talented.
Is he older than you?
Yes.
Lee Westwood has played professionally in four different decades. He had a two-shot win in Abu Dhabi. He put it incredibly well in the final round. His nemesis.
Very much so.
So afterwards, lots of people were asking him about his age, and he said at one point, I just can't believe that I'm this old. Because it kept coming up. So this is his 25th victory on the European Tour, and it was a very impressive win, obviously. It's a serious achievement. But he was making the point that he's had an injury-free career, and he was talking about his own regimen. And this is interesting because we'll touch on Bryson DeChambeau later on. So he was saying, I don't really need to be skinny. What I've done is concentrated on maintaining the areas of my body that take a battering. So he said knees, back, shoulders. I do a lot of exercise over the years, preventing injury there. And he said he played lots of different sports as a kid. So he didn't start playing golf until he was 14. So he said at that stage he had kind of developed and he was strong and he had a good physical base. But what he did say, and what I wanted to throw out to the group, given that none of us are physios, I know. But he said, I do actually worry about these kids who start playing golf at the age of five. Because golf, you're bending over, you curve your spine that way, you rotate as well. It's not the ideal movement for a 6 or 7 year old kid. I would have thought kids are malleable, flexible little things you can do anything with.
They're certainly supple. I wouldn't be with them on this one. Okay. I think kids start way too young. And they're pushed into golf and they're not really interested. Let them hit a few balls and let them play team sports and stuff like that up to a certain age. And then if they get interested in golf, then let them at it.
Okay.
But this thing of starting kids at 3, 4, 5, I just don't feel they're ready for it. I think they have more fun with groups.
Is that not maybe the point that Westwood is making, that there's too many young kids being forced to just play golf? As I think you're both probably agreeing with each other that actually, because he has that background, which seems to work for so many sports people of a variety of sports, learning the different skills is fine. But if you have a 6-year-old who's doing nothing but hitting 200-300 balls every day of the week, that you're...
That level
at some
of repetition's not good, yeah.
You're going to do some damage.
You said there Westwood incredibly talented.
Very much so.
So he's not just like a grafter type. He's got serious skills.
No, his swing is very individualistic, and it has been for over the years. And he wasn't tempted to change when the manufacturers came along. He didn't change his driver. Lee Westwood hits down on the ball with his driver. No other seriously good tour player hits down on the ball with their driver. Everybody hits up on it. But he has never changed. He has always kept it that way. And he's always driven the ball brilliantly. I remember playing with him in Paris, in Golf de National, where they played the Ryder Cup. And many years ago, the French Open was always probably the most difficult golf course you play all year because you had to hit it so straight. And I think he hit 14 out of 14 fairways. He was just really, really impressive. He struggled with the driver, or not the driver, sorry, he struggled with the putter. And he should have won many, many majors, but he putted poorly. He was never an aggressive putter. And I think the years have gone on.
Oh, that was his issue with putting, he wasn't aggressive.
Yeah. He always seemed, the ball never seemed to stay on line when he put it. It always seemed to, you know what I mean, wander off. It was never really
conviction,
aggressive enough,
yeah,
to get to the hole. And over the years, I think he's mellowed quite a lot as a person and stopped worrying about it. And now he just gets up, and if it goes in, it goes in. A bit like kind of Tom Watson, you know, when after his problems with the putting, he recovered from that. Now he just gets up and hits it. Fred Couples, something similar. They find a way to putt and not worry too much about it. And they actually now are better putters than probably they were when they were in the height of their career.
Did you ever get a sense of him? I don't know how well you knew him, but that he was somewhat tortured by the game. As you said, he should have won majors. He was a world number one, testimony to the fact that he was a serious player. And yet, when it came down to it, he may well have suspected or known deep down his putting and his short game were going to cost him. That's quite a tortured way to play the game.
He never came across that way, I have to admit. And I wouldn't have known him that well.
Okay.
I knew him when I was with... I was in the same stable as he was with Chubby Chandler many, many years ago, and had met him a good few times then.
Right. Maybe that was before he had missed out.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Okay.
But,
there was... Sorry, Peter, there was... I mean, I've never met him, but about 10 years ago, maybe 12 years ago, he went from... In his public interviews, he went from being affable, which I'd always thought of Westwood as kind of an easygoing, likable guy, to kind of slightly ratty in some of his responses, which at the time was interpreted as being that gap between his immense talent and his inability to deliver on the big tournaments because, as you said, of his short game woes. And there was a while where he really didn't seem to enjoy being asked questions about his game and would respond accordingly. And then in the years, maybe the last 6 or 7 years, anytime I've ever seen him interviewed, he seems to have refound some of that calm and some of that kind of just more easygoing nature that he had. Do you think that would be fair?
I think so. I think he was looking for something that probably wasn't there. Like, he moved the whole family over to America to play the American Tour because he felt it gave him a better chance to win a major. He felt his game was more suited to America. And it never really worked out for him. It's worked out for very few Europeans who kind of base themselves in the States and play, you know, just in America. He was more suited to the, to be honest with you, the European Tour. His game could change from the different golf courses quite easily. And I think he got a bit lost out there, to be honest.
Mm. Well, 46, that's a big enough tournament to win for sure. Too late for him to win a major now? More than likely.
I would say more than likely.
Yeah.
I certainly wouldn't be backing him to win a major.
Yeah. Darren Clark is the example of maybe sneaking one when nobody expects it. Mm. Maybe an Open Championship.
Yeah.
Because he's done well at all different major courses. Mm. He's done well at Masters. He's obviously done well at Opens, done well at the other ones. So that adaptability in his game.
Yeah, he has that adaptability because he drives the ball so well.
So it wasn't like he was only ever in with a shot of one or two majors a year. He could conceivably have won them all.
Very much so, yeah. His game was not just suited to Augusta or US Open.
Amazing he couldn't improve the putting a bit more over 20, 30 years, isn't it?
Like, and he probably had one of the best caddies on the bag for the last couple of years is Billy Foster. And Billy Foster stuck with him probably when he should have went, you know, elsewhere. I think Billy Foster should have been with Tiger at the time, to be
honest.
Really? Yeah.
Is he the best out there?
He would have been one of probably the best or one of the best out there.
In what way?
Just his approach to it and his knowledge of the game. Like, Billy caddied for his first person was Seve. And if you can't learn off Seve, you're struggling.
Yeah. I didn't realise he was that highly regarded. I knew he was high profile and a good character.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So, Farmers Insurance Open, Rory McIlroy is the favourite. 6-1. John Rahm, second favourite. Tiger Woods, 9-1, third favourite. And on we go. Xander Schauffele, Justin Rose, Matsuyama. We're back, Nathan. We're back.
Yeah, that's a heck of a feel, isn't it?
Good.
Oof.
Yeah.
Torrey Pines. It's got everything you want. Class golf course. Brilliant finish. I love the 18th, Torrey.
Mm-hmm.
You know exactly where to place the ball. The second they step up, you're like, whoa, that's going in the water.
This was Tiger's famous event, wasn't it?
Well, he owned this place, yeah.
Eight victories at Torrey Pines.
Yeah.
So he's on 82 wins. 83 mm. and 18 are the two targets for Tiger Woods.
I suppose because it is a number, look, we delve deep into what Sam Snead achieved. Like, 82 is a made-up number. Like, I think anyone who actually analyzes it accepts 82 is made up, and the Tiger is far surpassed that.
I think it was 90 at one point. They had to downgrade a bunch of them. Yeah.
So it's all about 18. And it's more this week. I'm surprised in a way he's not favourite, but it's probably about, like, does he go out and his body looks good? The shots that they were showing over the last couple of days from the range look...
Well...
Sensational.
There are two videos, Fionn, I know you want to talk about. So one is the range video where they compile the contact of every single shot hit in the range. Did you see it?
Yeah, saw it this morning.
I presume even pros are saying, well, that looks tasty, yeah? Or is that about right? Could that have been any pro, really?
It could have been any pro.
Yeah, I thought that too. Yeah. But because it's Tiger, it looks unbelievable.
Yeah, but it's look, any pro who practices decently, they all practice in kind of a squares or lines.
Yeah. But I just meant the quality of the contact. That could have been anyone.
Could have been anybody.
I remember Darren Clark in conversation with Faherty. And Clark was saying the most impressive thing he had ever seen at a driving range was he watched Woods practice and go through the entire bag. And then he went and looked at the ground afterwards and Woods hadn't taken even a hint of a divot. And him and Faherty were both saying that's near impossible.
Mark O'Meara didn't take divots.
Okay.
So maybe
it's not that impressive, though.
Yeah.
Right, well, why were Clark and Faherty blown away by it then?
Because
hype for the show.
Yeah. By the sounds of it, none of this stuff that Tiger Woods has been doing is impressive at all.
Yeah, Peter, what has Tiger Woods done lately?
How do you end up getting so good?
So that's one video. The second video, Fionn, I wasn't as aware of this, but I guess it speaks to something Woods was talking about. We'll play the clip in a moment where he was talking about, frankly, just not liking fame, which won't surprise anyone. But there was another video you'd spotted.
Yeah, so it's been on Twitter. It's Charlie Woods, it's Tiger's son, who's 10, and was on a driving range hitting balls with Tiger standing, arms folded directly behind him. And I swear to you, like, it's the prettiest swing you've ever seen. Yeah. But for a 10-year-old, he's got serious impact. Like, it's not, you know, sometimes you look at a very young kid's swing and they, you know, they're shaped, they're stack and tilt or whatever it is, it looks nice. This is more than that. Like, there's impact. Like, he's really driving into the ball. So obviously everyone's going wild because it's like, oh my God, Charlie Woods is hardly surprising that he's inherited talent, but what talent he has. But then there's a second element is because the video is made from behind a tree of a 10-year-old without his father's permission. Now, you know, and so whilst everybody is oohing and aahing over the quality of Charlie Woods' swing, there's also like, you know, a kind of an ethical issue about, like, you know, it's like the kid is 10. Is he not entitled to his privacy? You know, his father might be one of the most famous athletes on earth, but still he's 10 years old. And so on the it's been an interesting week or whatever it is that because everyone's kind of wowed up about the potential talent on display. But at the same time, there's real unease amongst golf journalists, etc., about, like, is this what it's gotten to now that Tiger, who's been so careful for so long to shield his children from the glare of publicity, that now as his children are getting older, that all of a sudden that kind of shield has now fallen away. So
it's an interesting point.
Doesn't sit well. Really doesn't sit well. Like, clearly a long lens camera.
Had you seen the video?
I saw the video, yeah. I saw the video last week.
I couldn't work out... It was certainly like there were other people on the driving range. It didn't look like it was a... It wasn't like a tournament where Woods had brought along Charlie.
It's a junior event.
Oh, it's a junior event. Oh,
so
I see.
So he was playing in a junior event and then Tiger caddied for Charlie.
Ah, well, that's not right then.
Well, and also, like, the laws are probably different in the US. I can't imagine if you're having a junior event out in Spa, well, I could just rock up with my camera and start filming all the kids.
Not from 20 yards away, certainly.
There's no GDPR in America.
No, but so like you probably see far more kids coming through Spawell practicing and as to what sort of talent he has, and it's going to be blown out of all proportion anyways. The very fact he can hit the ball is, oh my God, it could be the second coming of Tiger Woods.
It's like the Tiger Woods video a minute ago.
But it's a rare occasion that your son follows in okay, he might follow in professional lives, but he's very rarely as good as the father. Like, tell me a sport, especially golf, where the son has come and probably beaten the father, or, you know,
one of the Davis loves must have beaten their father.
Yeah, possibly.
How many of them were there? Peter Alice. Peter Alice was better than his father.
Yeah.
How many fathers and sons have won professional golf tournaments?
Old Tom Morris, young Tom Morris.
Oh wow, that's a while back.
That's the answer to every historical question about golf ever.
Justin Thomas is obviously better than his father.
And what's his face from? What's his face? BBC commentator Peter Alice didn't. Wasn't his dad a golfer?
Oh, that's a, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm talking modern times when actually you have to deal with the money and the fame that comes with it.
Bill Haas, Jay Haas.
Ah, yes, nailed it.
Yeah,
nailed it.
Shot out of the water. That's all we know.
There you go.
Well, to be fair, when I said Justin Thomas being better than his father wasn't a real professional, so. Yes.
Do you know what? You should bring, if you play in the Irish PGA, you should bring Joe down and just get him to go, you know, just know it's that. You're not a real professional. You're just, you know, PGA professional.
Yeah, but I just didn't want, you know, because they're all better than their dads, basically.
I mean the problem
won
is
tournaments. Yeah, sorry, Fionn. Yeah.
I mean, the problem is that Tiger Woods isn't Jay Haas. Tiger Woods is arguably the greatest golfer that's ever lived. So, you know, fill those boots, son.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, look, every father wants their kid in a way to follow in their footsteps, whatever. If Tiger Woods has anything about him, he's going, dear God, I just hope my child isn't as screwed up as I am.
We're paying lots of money for good schooling and a good life.
I actually wouldn't like my kids to follow as professional golfers.
No?
No.
Why not?
I'd prefer them just to, you know, get on with life and do their thing.
Are you worried they'd achieve more than you in the game?
that wouldn't be hard, now would it?
Why wouldn't you? It's a great life.
No, there's a lot to learn outside of professional golf. It's very much it's a circus, and you know, I'd like them to be a little bit more rounded than the circus.
Do you feel you're not as rounded a person as you would be otherwise?
Possibly so. Yeah.
Do you really?
I know a lot of other people who are not rounded because they're in that circus.
Who would they be?
Well, Joe tells me every time I walk into the studio, mind what you say, so I can't say.
I know, I think there's a way of framing this that won't be too derogatory.
No, I can't imagine there is a way of framing this that it won't be derogatory at all.
So he's going to let me go and then delete it for later.
But I love, by the way, the big blind spot we all have about ourselves, that you're like, well, I possibly am less rounded, but you should see everyone else, how they're real messed up. What would Peter Lorre say about Peter Lorre, I wonder? In what way might you be slightly less rounded? It's not like you were... Again, I say this as a complete chump of a golfer.
Okay.
But it's not like you were in the world's top 10 and completely detached from reality.
No, I wasn't. No, but I still was somewhat detached from reality. You forget, like, you're in a very privileged situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it baffles me now that why didn't I do more? Why didn't I do more for people that were around me, close to me? That who are mad keen golfers. Like, why didn't I hand down my clubs to them as much as why didn't, you know what I mean, golf balls, whatever it may be.
Right.
You know, you were too focused on oneself rather than...
And where am I in the pecking order and how am I doing?
Exactly, yeah. Rather than saying, you know, hey, you might need something or that person might need something. You know, why can't, you know, I'm very privileged to get it.
Mm.
I'm not using it. So why don't I let somebody else use it?
I would say an awful lot of sports people can relate to that, because the reason you're so good is because you're so bloody selfish.
Yeah, you had to be a selfish kid, didn't you?
I did actually.
Like, that's what got you
to cultivate
what made you
that.
Good in the first place.
Yeah, but
you couldn't be too nice and say, "Oh, I don't know if I should beat this guy."
No, I'm not talking about that. That's purely in competition. But when you're not in competition, there's lots of things going on. Look, when I was on tour, a lot of the players, they wouldn't even talk to the other people who are working on tour. Like, if you come into the studio here, I see everybody interacting, no matter who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Kenny, whoever else, they all talk to everybody. Well, I get that impression.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Sorry, that's a joke, actually. Okay. That is, on the record, that is a joke. I could name other names, but not Pat Kenny.
So, but on tour, guys wouldn't talk to the cameraman. They wouldn't talk to the guys picking up the bins, whatever it may be, because they were above them.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of... that I wouldn't like my child to grow up like that.
Where there's such a defined pecking order.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get that.
I would much prefer them to... I approached it like we were all in a job and we all, you know, got along. And I would go out of my way to talk to these people, to say hello, to recognise them at least, you know.
Yeah.
But courtesy car drivers, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And it goes throughout all sports.
Well, I think golf is a, not on its own, but a friend of mine used to be a pretty high-level competitive swimmer. And listening to him one day, and he compared golf and swimming in that they're solitary sports, that you pursue excellence very much on your own, and that the nature of each is such that as you're practicing or going through your whatever, doing your laps or hitting balls on the range, is that you're doing it, and part of it is whether conscious or unconsciously, is you're trying to expel outside things so that you can just stick with this one thing, which doesn't often happen in team sports, which by their very nature are clearly you're doing it in collaboration with others, and also a lot of team sports are reactive, whereas and so I thought there's an interesting difference between, say, golf and swimming, and I'm sure there are other sports that also share those things, but and that his argument was is that's what makes them peculiarly kind of isolating, so that you become isolated from the world around you.
I don't think it's very noticeable that every 2 years, certainly with the European team, when they get to be in a team environment, they all come away like almost like floating on air afterwards. The love, the sense of camaraderie, like oh my God, it's a relief actually to have this. And then they have to go back to
the following week not talking to each other.
I think it's very apparent with a lot of them that they would much prefer if their life was, can we play as a team every week?
Yeah.
I really do. Yeah. How do we go into that? Oh, yeah, so the Charlie Woods video.
Oh, yeah.
Not great. A symptom of the world we live in, unfortunately.
What's interesting is also, I mean, I don't know, we have the clip, but just on the nature of whether you want your kids in golf or not, but that Tiger's own thoughts on fame are interesting.
Well, I'll play it. So Woods is doing various interviews. He's been very charming this week. I watched a good bit of different press conference things, and he was really good with lots of people. So at one stage, somebody asked Woods, how does he feel about fame?
I don't like it. I never have liked it. There are friends of mine who are multi-billionaires and are very successful and have these awesome planes and mega yachts and unbelievable homes and make billions of dollars, and no one has a single clue when they're walking down the street. Okay, so that's different. As a sports figure, we're on the TV a lot, and our faces are more recognized, and that's part of the territory.
So, Fionn, it's not surprising, really, is it?
It's not surprising at all. I mean, this is a guy whose super yacht is called Privacy. So, but it's an interesting admission, if not surprising. And in light of the Charlie Woods video, or the video of his son going, you can imagine that Tiger, though, understands the game. He understands how it is.
And plays
the game. Lived
in
it. Yeah, I mean, plays the game. I think that's a fair cop. But, like, you know, basically you're talking about a kid who, since his first appearance in the Mike Douglas Show when whatever he was, two, has been famous, and from the age of 19 or 20 has been, like, unbelievably famous. So, yeah, I think it's an interesting indictment of fame. And although it made me laugh, he goes, I have many multi-billionaire friends. I'm like, they're all like, what? Are they all 84? And, you know.
Also, he seems to be under the impression that being a billionaire is a very attainable other life. If he hadn't played golf, then he, you know.
Because he's not a billionaire?
Somehow,
Tiger?
He's
getting close, isn't he?
The divorce probably was a dent.
Bill Murray always famously said, if you want to be rich and famous, just try being really rich first. That kind of covers it.
Yeah.
I always thought that was a good line.
But I imagine that Tiger will be a formidable parent when it comes to protecting the privacy of his children. And I mean, I realize Peter's right. I don't think GDPR rules apply in America, but don't child privacy or child protection does apply, doesn't it? I mean, there is. I mean, technically, Tiger could really go to town on anyone who has filmed his child without permission and then circulated it on the internet.
Well, what? And I suppose when you go into a golf course, maybe you're signing away your rights. But what about having his children there when he comes off the 18th at Augusta?
That's true. He hasn't exactly hid them away. Mm.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. Yeah, fair enough.
Very good point. Nathan Murphy.
I don't agree with that. I think parents should always be allowed to choose where and when their children.
He chose then, yeah.
So he chose, you know, I want my family there. I accept that they're going to be photographed. I accept that then they're out there and people will make judgments on that. Mm. But not when they're 10 years of age.
Yeah.
And you think you're having a private moment. Because where does this end? And unfortunately, when Tiger Woods talks about fame, it's a fame that's at a different level to like the most famous sports person in the world. Mm. Like, as his kids get to 15, 16, their life is going to be hell. Like, they're not going to be able to go around and just do normal things. They will be on TMZ and...
Do you think so?
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
Woods' kids.
Yes.
They'll end up in Europe or something like that.
Mm, I didn't think they were in for that. By the way, on where his game is, so he dropped the clubs post-President's Cup and now he's getting back into it and all the rest. Interesting point here, Peter, you can talk to us about this. So he was talking and he has been experimenting with TaylorMade's new Sim drive. I think Sim is just the name of the driver as opposed to some kind of technology. So it's given him more clubhead speed, but what he was saying about his current game, and I loved hearing this, by the way, this was the way he has been for the last year or two or whatever, I thought was great, because he said, I know what my current regular driver can do. So he's thinking about using the Sim, and he said he's not going to use the Sim unless the Sim can do this as well. So he said, it's a driver where whenever I need to, I can hit a draw, I can turn it over, get the extra length. And then when I want to hit a cut and find a fairway, he said, it doesn't go very far, but I also know I can hit the draw at any time. And he said, I'm not putting the Sim in the bag unless I can do that. And I loved hearing that the draw is for special occasions, but otherwise, Tiger Woods, if he finds fairways and lets the iron play do the work, that's exactly right. Oh no, you disagree with me again.
No, it's not that I disagree with you. The game now has moved on to such an extent, it's all about length.
So do you think that's quite an old-fashioned thing when he's talking about his little cutty fade?
Yeah, because I was talking to somebody who was in Abu Dhabi last week, and the second hole. Now, the second hole, when I played in Abu Dhabi, and not only for me, because I was one of the mid-hitters at best, was a very good driver, a good iron down the fairway, and a wedge onto the green. And if you really caught one down breeze, you might get there with two woods. Last week, it was 6 iron for some people. The 17th hole was a driving a wedge. Søren Kjelstad, and I spoke to Søren Kjelstad about this many times, the 17th used to be scared to be Jesus out of you because you had to carry the water, right? And it was into the wind, it was like 270 to carry the water. And then you were hitting 4 iron into the green.
So is this in the space of maybe 10 years?
Yeah. So what I mean is golf has gone on to such an extent that this Healy fade is no good anymore. You're wasting your time.
Okay.
Can I ask two questions, Peter, though?
Yeah.
Or one question based on 2 points. One is that Tiger's not short. I mean, he's not short. He's 300-odd yards average or 299 or whatever the hell it is. But he's not a particularly short hitter. He's not as long as the prodigiously long guys. And then the second point I was going to make was isn't Tiger curating his schedule? So he might never ever do well at an Abu Dhabi championship or at a course that demands 340 off the tee or 330 off the tee, and that he might play 10 events, pick them carefully, and like, say for instance, the Open this year, which I see that a lot of the golf writers have him as absolute favorite to win at Royal St. George because he can plot his way around, and you know, he doesn't have to be super super long. So is that not a fair point as well?
It is on a golf course, on a links style golf course. But what they're playing, they're setting up golf tournaments now where you can hit wedge out of the rough. And I personally would much prefer to be in a situation hitting a wedge out of the rough than hitting a 6 iron onto the green.
Okay, yeah.
On top.
But he
flags.
Won at Augusta last year, and Augusta is meant to favour the massive hitter.
Augusta was only over the last couple of years was in a situation favoured the long hitter, but this year they actually got a little bit of run on the ball in Augusta, if you remember.
I think, to be fair, Augusta, your wedge play has to be inch perfect as well and around the greens. Like, it's almost a complete test, you know.
But plus it's a major, and plus people are under far more pressure, and it's a short field, and, you know, there's an awful lot of young guys.
Just to round off, we'll come back to Tiger in a second, just that tangent for a second where you're talking to Kelson and he's saying, geez, man, you want to see what it's like these days. So that's about a 10-year window from what you're talking about. So has the ball improved that much in 10 years? Is that purely equipment, or are these guys just bigger, stronger and better strikers of a ball?
It has to be both.
Okay.
It has to be both.
But the ball would have improved.
The ball has improved, but I would say let's put it into a 50-50 situation. 50% on ball and 50% on physique. Because now they are getting into a situation where they are so strong, they're able to pound it out there.
Okay. Because I was just under the impression that, frankly, you know, they come up with the Pro V1 and maybe it hadn't changed all that much in the last 20 years.
Oh, it's changed dramatically in 20 years.
Okay.
It's changed dramatically.
I know lens have, but I wasn't sure the ball had.
5-6 years.
Okay. So the ball is changing all the time, is it?
They're improving it little by little all the time.
Right.
Every year they're talking about bringing out a new driver and getting an extra 10 yards.
I just always thought that was rubbish.
Compound that.
I always thought that was marketing speak, really.
No. So every year. If you were to rank the differences between, say, ball, equipment and just that the modern golfer is, because of sports science, you know, they're well sculpted, they've got all the muscles in all the right places, where would you rank them? Is it ball one, equipment two?
I would probably
the physique
put,
of the players
I
now three?
Put, no, I would probably put physique first.
Right, okay.
And that's the big part of it. And then I would put equipment and then ball.
All right.
The equipment has been the biggest one, I think.
I'd always thought it was the ball, some of that impression. No, okay.
Nicholas is very
fixated on the ball.
Fixated on the ball.
Maybe the ball now is about the only way to bring it back.
I think they're going to have to get to a stage where they're all going to play with the same golf ball.
Mm. It's amazing they don't when you think about it.
But that would kill manufacturers.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
But they're going to have to get to that stage. Otherwise, they're going to start building golf courses that are 8,000 yards.
Oh, no, look, it can't keep going. It's nuts. So, Tiger then. If you can get extra yards, take the extra yards. That'd be your sense. That's not his. It's interesting. He's he's railing against the current atmosphere.
Yeah, I'd like to see a percentage of what clubs he is hitting into each hole in comparison to, you know, a guy who's leading the driving stats.
Hmm.
And leading the driving stats is not only length, but it's accuracy as well.
Hmm. Well, that's Tiger. Just to say, Rory can go world number one.
Mm.
He was asked about this. He said, that certainly wasn't on the radar when I was flying back from Northern Ireland in July, he said. No kidding. And he was saying he doesn't think about those things. His goals now, he was saying, are all things like be plus one strokes gained in approach play, that kind of stuff. He doesn't set goals in terms of winning anything.
They all do that now, though.
Process, Nathan.
So they'll have 20 different goals that are carefully worked out with their statisticians that they know if they hit these, you're going to win probably 5 or 6 times.
Well, interesting, said approach play, because I heard Faldo last year and he was saying, you know, he thinks personally Augusta is about wedge play and that's Rory's biggest issue. He was saying, I never trust Rory to land at pin high. And you know yourself, you can watch Rory sometimes and he'll clear the green and he'll look around and laugh and turn to the caddy, and that shouldn't be happening very often. It seems to happen to him most tournaments.
There seems to be a mystery there.
But it's improved.
Yeah, every hole. Or every once a round, so that's four rounds in a tournament. So, you know, four mysteries is way too many.
Yeah. There were just two other quick things I wanted to touch on. I have two players in the field. It's kind of like that time of the year where you're checking in on different people and where they are. So, Jason Day, it had just passed me by a little bit. So he's 44th in the world now. He's 32 years of age. Obviously, there's the vertigo and then his mother's illness, which was obviously very stressful, I'm sure. So I just saw this before we came in. His back last year was ruined, and so he's turned up at the tournament and they're saying, well, how are you now? And he was saying, well, I had two epidural shots last year and they lasted a week. I was coming into most events underprepared, and I'm also just on the back foot because of the injuries. He said he can only practice for 30 minutes of putting a day, and that he's been on a ball count on the range, so only a certain number of balls, had to withdraw from the President's Cup with back pain, and has had just a single top 10 finish since the Masters. He's finished.
I don't know. Can he have a fusion or?
Yeah, Tiger, his good friend.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. I had this thing. You should try it out.
I don't know what the nature of it is.
Maybe he thinks he's too young for that. And
maybe. Two epidural shots last year, and each time he got a week out of them.
Incredible.
Should have had a few more.
Every week.
Go back to Westwood here and go back to all these young lads. Westwood wasn't a Jim Bunny in any shape or form.
Strong looking.
But he was that physique. He was stocky.
Stocky.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't Jim.
No, it was a natural base. Exactly. He said it, he's just at a base. Yeah.
While these young lads have been pumping iron for how many years, and they're in a situation now where their bodies are collapsing.
Well, come on in, Bryson DeChambeau. So he's over in Dubai, which is on Shane Lowry's plane, Porger Hearn's plane, the Omega Dubai Desert Classic. He won this 12 months ago. That's his seventh tournament victory, by the way. I know we scoff at this guy, but like seven tournament victories, still only 26 years of age. Anyway, he said he has put on 30 pounds since his lightest. He was 195 at one stage at the 2018 Hero World Challenge. He said, I felt brittle. I felt like a gust of wind would push me over. So he's bulked up in the last couple of months. He's worked out four times a day. Takes a break, goes out and hits golfs. Goes back, works out. So he said he is now up from his general average weight of about 205 pounds. He's up to 225 pounds. He said, at the President's Cup, I had 6,000 calories a day.
Wow.
Yeah. He said he has driven the ball 400 yards in practice with his new physique.
He's got a 3-degree driver, I believe, or something like that.
Oh, does he?
Bloody hell.
Jesus. You want to get that straight? He said the thing people normally say is, well, you're going to get injured. You're going to get hurt doing this. And he says, and yeah, there are going to be some things that will pop up when you're working out this hard. Luckily, I've got a great guy with me. Anytime something's occurred, I've been able to get it fixed immediately. He says, I hurt myself doing a back extension there probably 2-3 weeks before the Hero, but within 4 days I was swinging a 185-mile-per-hour ball speed. And that was pretty much after throwing out my back, he said. So what my guy's able to do is incredible. Maybe just don't throw out your back. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't believe I was reading this. He's like, oh yeah, I threw out my back doing this, but it's fine. Mark DeChambeau. Yeah.
4 days now, 4 weeks, 4 months.
Just keeps on going. Incredibly. It's like Tiger saying that he has more bad days than he has good days with his body.
Isn't it extraordinary, like Tiger, who they all emulate, admire, love, that side of the coin, you know, of the working out coin hasn't quite dripped down.
Look at Jimenez. There's a lad.
I know.
Still going. Yeah. 56 now, is he?
DeChambeau has played, by the way, since he spoke of his 400-yard drives and has not driven the ball 400 yards. We should confirm. So, I don't
know. He drove the ball terribly in Abu Dhabi as well.
Did he? Mm. Okay.
It is a bit odd, though, I know he's a young fella, but he's still 26. He's a grown man. To add over 2 stone in weight.
Yeah.
Like, you're an athlete. Like, that's...
Have you seen him?
Poor Harrington used to go up and down.
Well, Harrington, yeah. But he's... She's like, the arms on
DeChambeau. Oh, my God. Himself and Brooks have been having a bit of a back and forth.
Ugh.
Brooks nailed him, in fairness.
The six-pack.
But do you not think that that's all just... Like, they're trying to turn it into, the big rival, or that they don't like each other, whereas... Get the feeling they're just jibing a little bit. Well,
DeChambeau said that today.
Yeah, it's just good fun.
I still think, so for Bryson it's a bit of good fun, and Rory it's a little bit of good fun, but deep down Brooks is like, kill you guys.
I'm absolutely going to kill you guys,
and I cannot wait to do it. It's going to be glorious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One last point to throw at you all. Jordan Spieth.
Great man.
Great man.
Jason Day is ranked 44th in the world now. Jordan Spieth 45th.
Yep.
Okay. So was, of course, world number one March 2016. He was 123rd in putting last year. That can't continue. So
he was he?
Yeah.
No, so not last year.
I thought he was putting it improved dramatically last year.
It was the year before. Sorry.
He was putting improved dramatically last year.
Yeah, last year he was much better.
Okay, yeah. 123rd is worse.
You're digging your own grave here.
I'm not, sorry. The thing I actually want to ask you guys about is this. So he's saying how his full swing was out of sync and he's got that sword now. So he's getting back. He's getting back to where he was. I'm not coming to that. And he's talking about faster play. So he was. They did this anonymous poll in 2017, and he was in the top five slowest players. You know, when the other players played each other anonymously. We're doing off the ball version of that.
Yeah, I'm in the room between you two guys.
Just go online, Joe.
Yeah, correct. So anyway, he said he has decided to play faster because the reason, not that he felt bad about playing slow with people, but he hated that label. So now he's actually on the tour's new pace of play policy board. So he is setting policy on slow play. And the big thing he's talking about is come April, there's going to be an observation list. So basically, the slowest 10% on tour from April will be under watch at all times.
And it'll be named publicly.
Oh, good question. It's golf. It's golf, so no.
Named and shamed in the European Tour. You're on a list.
PGA Tour wouldn't name anyone.
No.
Well, it depends. If it's Jordan Spieth and Tiger Woods, then they're not being named.
No.
If it's some 14-year-old kid from China, then they'll literally put in the
headline. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's how it will be. Who are in the bottom 10%? I don't know. Spieth. Who's the slowest player on tour? Kevin Na's improved.
Mm. He was probably the slowest at the time.
Jason Day likes a bit of meditation pre-shot.
Keegan Bradley.
Oh, Keegan Bradley.
Yeah.
Stop spitting, but slow.
What's the other guy?
DeChambeau, obviously. Remember, he was like the caddies. Yeah. No one mentioned the caddies.
The guy with completely, he had no hair on top.
Sure thing.
No.
Bill,
Ben Crane? Ben Crane's very slow.
Ben Crane, I think, was the slowest player.
Yeah. Well,
Ben Crane won that. Didn't he? Ben Crane won at Torrey Pines.
Did he?
Yeah, he did, yeah. I think that was his biggest win.
Okay, well, there's going to be a list, and they're going to be watched. That's the big news. That's everything I felt we needed to discuss this week.
Can I throw something in just before we...
Yeah.
It's in relation to Patrick Reed. So, obviously, Patrick Reed is public enemy number one for not just the... you know, brush and sand, but his two-finger dismissal, well, metaphorical two-finger dismissal of any criticism, he doesn't care. And, you know, it's made him, he's now kind of the guy to hate in 2020, or to hate more than people hated him up to now. Anyway, I was just trawling, and I found video, and I had completely forgotten this, but it's the 2013 BMW Championship, the second round where Tiger Woods goes into the bushes, or into the woods, and he's clearing kind of loose impediments, and the ball moves. It actually, like, you can see the ball move in the video. And so he's subsequently penalized two shots for not calling the foul. But he denied it completely. Absolutely said, no way. He goes, it oscillated. And it's and it's weird. So anyway, so it got me thinking. I was like...
You're going to get a cease and desist letter here, but go on.
No, but my point is this, is that... Tiger Woods is forgiven, air quotes, but people kind of look past more readily, including me, by the way, these perceived indiscretions because Tiger Woods is Tiger Woods. Whereas Patrick Reed, who is at the best, I guess he's not the most easily likable player. So whatever it is, that little, you know, the crime of brushing sand in on your way back in the swing becomes a much bigger thing because of the crime itself, but because Patrick Reed's not that likable. And I guess I'm kind of ratting on myself that I would be first to kind of condemn Patrick Reed, but I would be way back in the list to do the same because Tiger Woods, and in my mind, Tiger Woods is guilty or was guilty of exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Just legally, I'm going to point out, in Tiger Woods' mind, he absolutely wasn't. So, but I'd certainly take your...
He absolutely wasn't what?
In his mind, he wasn't guilty, I'm sure, and he would have called...
Yeah, but Patrick Reed's saying the exact same thing, my point. Patrick Reed said exactly the same. He goes, there is no way I did that on purpose. Not a chance. No,
and was there a big deal made about the Woods thing? Like, was he, like, quizzed after that for his round?
Yeah, he was. Right. And in fairness, so in the press conference, Tiger Woods didn't shirk any question, and the journalist really did ask him about it, and he kept going, no, it oscillated,
right?
But the tour they penalized him two shots because they said, no, it wasn't oscillation. The ball actually moved.
Oh, right. Well, I take back my qualification.
Yeah, my point is that they're similar things in that you have a player does something that is adjudicated a foul. The player denies the foul, says, I didn't do it. I read it differently. But we condemn Patrick Reed and say, well, you know, it's beyond credibility. Patrick Reed, no. But with Tiger Woods, he was given, I won't say a pass, because as I said, the journalist did fairly kind of hammer him at the time. And this was the year, of course, with the drop at Augusta, you know, so it wasn't a one-off. Mm. But I'm saying is that, like, it's, you know, it's easier to forgive the person you like more, I guess, is the point.
Oh, well, look, in life, you know, if you're a bit more light, you get away with a bit more.
Yeah.
That's why Peter Lorre got slammed if he did the tiniest thing wrong.
Exactly, yeah. I definitely see it as a, no matter who it is, if it was Tiger, if it was Davis Love, if it was Fred Couples, probably the most liked player on tour, if he did it, I personally would be calling it out.
Sure, but I think we're talking about the general public here are very quick to forgive those players.
Well, unfortunately so. And the tour has definitely backed Patrick Reed, or certainly taken the viewpoint of not sanctioning him in any way. Mm. And I've looked to quash the story as much as possible, which is totally wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you do every time Patrick Reed shows up? Patrick Reed cheat, asterisk. I don't know, what do you do? You got to get on with it at some stage, don't we? Never, says Peter.
No, it's not that. See,
what's an appropriate treatment of Reed at this stage?
He should have been banned.
Yeah, but he wasn't. So now that he hasn't been, what's next?
That's not the right answer, though.
Okay.
No, but that is the answer. So that's what's happened.
I know that's what's happened, but I'm just saying it's not the right answer.
But in 3 months' time,
he'll never get over it. Nobody will move on from this because there was no sanction. There's one or two players that have been sanctioned, and okay, you can say, right.
The sanction doesn't help you move on in some respects either. If anything, it makes it loom even larger. And then he's like Patrick Reed back from his ban and all this kind of hype and all this kind of stuff.
I don't know.
Look, I agree he should have been banned, but I just mean, what's the appropriate treatment of Reed now? What do you want?
But hang on, but Reed was sanctioned. He got a 2-stroke penalty.
Oh, yeah, well, that was very lenient.
No, but under the rules of golf, that's what happens.
Should he not have been suspended from the tournament? No.
Well, going on the, if you go back to the Simon Dyson when he was suspended, he was
every time.
No, but I'm just because
Simon Dyson. We should get Simon Dyson on.
I can have his number there if you want.
Oh, yeah, text him there and say, Simon, just chatting about you again here. Okay. Guess what we're talking about? Yeah.
But like he was banned, so I don't know.
No, but it was what they judged was that if he had been adjudged to have done it intentionally, he should have been thrown out.
Okay, well then I don't know. You know what? What's appropriate?
Me not talking about it.
No, it's fine. I think people are a bit iffy about him as a person.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, which makes it worse, 100%. Then it's like, fits in with everything we kind of suspected about him.
Yeah. But I think if Adam Scott had, you know, a gentleman of the game, elder statesman, you know, much admired.
100%.
If he had done it, then at this stage people would have... Oh, you don't think so?
No, sorry, I totally agree. I think people's reaction would have been...
It was a one-off. See, it doesn't help that Reed, there's the suspicion it's not a one-off.
Did he mean
it?
Yeah. Did he mean it? Definitely would have been a...
Yeah, if Scott had come out and said, I did not mean that, people might have said, Jesus, maybe he didn't.
Yeah. I mean, Reed's character, or certainly the way he's perceived, and, you know, stories and tales and rumours about him that date back to his college days, they don't do him any favours. And so Reed just comes across as a very unlikable character. And as much as the PGA are doing their best to kind of insulate him against any further sanction, but the general public, and it's exactly, Nathan, your point, is that like every tournament he shows up in, there's that kind of section that'll go, oh, here's Patrick Reed, the cheat. Whereas I guess the original point I was making is that Tiger Woods, who is guilty of a very similar offence, which in the greater scheme of things is not that big a deal, and, you know, never, ever got any of that, ever.
No, it's true. Life's not fair, I guess. Who knows why people at large make these decisions and kind of react this way? It's a million different little things. We're going to wrap things up, fellas. So enjoy the golf in Dubai, which we probably haven't talked about enough, but that's always good on a Sunday morning. Harrington is playing, Larry is playing.
Oh, yeah.
Playing very difficult this year.
Is it really?
I believe, yeah.
Okay.
Scoring is much higher than normal.
And then Farmers Insurance Open, Torrey Pines, McIlroy favourite, Rahm second favourite, Tiger Woods third favourite. Let's hope it turns out some way like that.
Amazing.
Yeah. Fionn, thanks a mil.
Thanks, guys.
Nathan, cheers, Fionn.
Thanks as ever.
Thanks, Joe.
And Peter Lorry,
you
get
much.
Back to the practice range
right
away.
Back it off. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here.